And we're very, very grateful for the presence of Father Sean McKnight from the USCCB. So we're very grateful that you're here and very eager to hear what you have to share with us this morning. So we welcome you.
Good morning. I am very privileged and honored to be invited to address this assembly. This is the first time I've ever been with you. Last week, I was with the nation's diocesan vocation directors. And let me just share with you personally, with all the various organizations and different sectors of the church that I relate to in my office at the Secretariat of Clergy, Consecrated Life, and Vocations. You know, some report that the church is in an abysmal state, that we're embattled, that we're constantly losing membership, that vocations are down and so forth. But you know, if you were at the convention last week of the vocation directors and what I experienced in the short time I've been with you here, that isn't true. There is so much joy. And you know why? And this is, I believe, the best of our Holy Father, Pope Francis' message, is that the gospel has already been proven. The joy of the gospel is what we have. The only bad thing is not everybody sees it. And that's what we have to work on. And so there is a lot of good news. And there's a lot of positive things happening. And so from my perspective at the national office, it has to do with consecrated life. There is so much going on that is so good. And that's what the bishops, especially in the upcoming year of consecrated life, want to get across. So on behalf of Bishop Michael Burbidge, the chairman of the committee that I staff, he is the Bishop of Raleigh in North Carolina, and all the bishops of the committee, and on behalf of Archbishop Kurtz, the president, I extend the conference's appreciation for your witness of consecrated life, of your witness to Christ in this world and in our country. So, I'm going to give, and I've been invited to give, a short presentation. I'll keep to the 30 minutes. A short presentation on what we do in my office and how it relates to your organization and your communities. And in order to do that, I have to talk a little bit more broadly about the conference itself. By the way, if you are on Wi-Fi, or as they say in Italian, I think Wi-Fi or something like that, you can actually access this PowerPoint that I will be going through, and you can look at it later. We have it posted on our webpage for Consecrated Life. And so you can go to www.usccb.org/consecratedlife is one word, and you'll find it available there. So, the Committee on Clergy, Consecrated Life, and Vocation, CCLV. That's our short-term use within the conference itself. 255 will work as well, I guess, using the Roman numerals. But it was in 2008, it began as a merged committee. The whole conference went through a downsizing and a restructuring. And so what they did on paper to reduce the costs of the conference, is they merged six committees: a committee on bishops' life and ministry, a committee on priestly life and ministry, a committee on priestly formation, a committee on vocations, a committee on consecrated life, and a committee on the permanent diaconate. Those six committees were served by three secretariats. The secretariats are the offices that mirror the bishops' committees. So they merged them all, shoved them all into one committee. Nice. More efficient, right? At least on paper. The difficulty on the one hand is that we have to serve so many different sectors of the church that can be trying. But on the other hand, it is very important that we see how there are so many common patterns to the different works within the church, the different sectors of the church. And that's been a great privilege for me. I have learned so much about consecrated life by just serving in the office that I have now. And that is a great privilege for a diocesan priest. We don't have much in the way of training in seminary on consecrated life. The only knowledge I had was from the sisters serving in our schools in Wichita, Kansas, and just my experience of working with those in religious life. But the very fact of a difference between religious life and consecrated life, that there are various forms of consecrated life, and what is of the essence of that office, that is not what is one of the objectives of the training of parish priests, and it ought to be. I see that. So, looking at the various mandates of the coffers, we have the diaconate, priestly life and ministry, consecrated life, and then vocations and priestly formation. That would include our seminaries. That slide is to impress you on how much work I have to do. So we have the CCLV committee, currently chaired by Bishop Michael Burbidge. There are 8 other bishops, and 2 of them, Bishop Curtis Guillory and Bishop William Callahan, also serve on the commission on religious life and ministry with Bishop Burbidge. So we have those 3 bishops that serve on the Commission on Religious Life and Ministry. We have 5 consultants, one of which is Sister Rose McDermott, who serves as our first advisor on things pertaining to consecrated life, particularly if it involves canon law. By no means not the only consultant, but one of our primary ones. The secretariat, the office, myself as executive director. Currently, Father John Guthrie is the associate director, and Mr. Dan Hart is our staff assistant. Father Ralph O'Donnell from Omaha, Nebraska, will be my new incoming associate director starting January 5th, 2015. Father John Guthrie is taking a new assignment, so we're pleased to announce and to have Father Ralph O'Donnell with us coming soon. Again, here's another slide that just shows the various organizations that we relate to. Under clergy, we have a number of organizations that pertain to the diaconate, the National Federation of Priest Councils, the National Organization for the Continuing Education of Roman Catholic Clergy, the Asociación Nacional de Sacerdotes Hispanos, the Spanish Priests Association we have in the United States, and finally the Vicars for Clergy. For vocations, we have NCDVD, the National Conference of Diocesan Vocation Directors, the National Religious Vocation Conference, and of course the Sarah Club. With priestly formation, NCA Seminary Department, the Institute for Priestly Formation, and then we have 2 organizations that pertain to seminary faculty, one for colleges and one for theologians. Under consecrated life, we of course have the two religious conferences in your council, plus the U.S. Association of Consecrated Virgins and the U.S. Conference of Secular Institutes, as well as the Vicars for Religious, which is an important conference for us because they are the bishop's delegates for religious. And one thing you must keep in mind, the USCCB is not the nation's chancery. We get a lot of questions posed to us that's what most people think of it. In fact, when I was first asked to apply for the current office that I have 5 years ago, I knew very little about the conference. And in fact, if you were to poll the average priest or the person sitting in the pew, they would know very little about the conference, as well as they should, because it's really not designed to be at the forefront. We exist to help the individual bishops, first and foremost. That's our focus. Any programming we might do at the national level is only because it is most appropriate for us to do that under the principle of subsidiarity. Primarily, we are about assisting bishops regards to consecrated life, assisting bishops with their relations with religious in their own dioceses. For the Commission on Religious Life and Ministry, it is really staffed by the National Religious Retirement Office and my office. The NRRO, as you know, you've heard, I think, from Sister Denise already, they take care of the national collection and the distribution of funds, working with the Commission of Religious Life and Ministry. On my side of the equation, we handle more of the pastoral efforts, such as the promotion of consecrated life, the promotion of religious vocations, and again, specifically supporting the relations between local diocesan bishops and religious superiors. The Commission has been established by Mutue Relaciones. This is a hybrid commission between the Religious Conference and the U.S. Bishops' Conference. Of course, we have the unique situation in the United States of having 3 religious structures. So The commission is a little large, and it's not designed to be a policy-driven structure, but one that looks for areas, ways that we can work together in order to promote religious life. You'll see one of the fruits of that in just a moment. Here are some a review of some of our annual projects. These are things we do all the time. First, the National Vocation Awareness Week. It used to be held in January, and just recently the bishops voted to move it from January to the first full week of November. The reason being is that we've been pushing schools and college campuses to be better at promoting and developing a culture of vocations, but when we have National Vocation Awareness Week in the middle or early part of January, that cuts out the college programs altogether. And many of those in the high school, Catholic high schools, say that, well, it's so close to Catholic school weeks, it's just too much going on at that one time. So the bishops listened. They do listen, by the way. And they moved it. And so this year, starting of all years to start it on, it will be November 2nd, All Souls Day. But throughout that entire week, we will have some resources for you and your members of your institutes to utilize. Also, we promote the World Day of Prayer for Consecrated Life on or around February 2nd. For the United States bishops, they have really pushed observing that on the Sunday nearest to February 2nd in order for it to have a bigger bang, you know, with the parish folks. Some dioceses I know on February 2nd, no matter when it takes place, the bishop will have a special event, a prayer service or a mass with lunch or dinner. Then World Day of Prayer for Vocations, again, held every year on the fourth Sunday or Good Shepherd Sunday, fourth Sunday of Easter. And so we have resources to promote that. On our own, for nearly 20 years, we've conducted an annual survey of the newly ordained. And for the last 4 years, we've conducted an annual survey of those who make final profession, men and women. And those surveys are significant. We're going to get into those details here in just a little bit. For National Vocations Awareness Week, again, it's been transferred to November. We have available on our website, and I apologize, it's in red, the website down at the last bullet point. That's a hyperlink. That means you can click on it and go, and I don't know if we have that ability or not. But if you go to usccb.org/vocations, you'll find a link for a special webpage for that observance, and you'll find video reflections, even homiletic notes for each weekday that you might give to your parish priest, your chaplain, or whoever to consider preaching on vocations throughout the week. We have looked at the cycle of readings, and sorry, page not found. Well, there you go. We can just skip it, sister. Thank you. But again, if you access this PowerPoint, you'll be able to go directly to it through the hyperlink. We also have a prayer card every year that you're free to download, print, and use to your heart's content. World Day of Consecrated Life. This year, the bishops are going to observe it the weekend of 7th, 8th of February, 2015. Why? Because February 1st is Super Bowl Sunday. This also plays into our observance of the year for Consecrated Life. February 8th will be a very important day. We also have prayer card available for it. Prayers of the Faithful to be used at Mass, even bulletin quotes, video clips. If you're any of your members are good at social media, you can utilize these things yourself and push them out to people that you're with. Okay, just a couple words about what we're learning from our vocation surveys. The whole point of doing a survey is to get data that is credible, scientifically credible, in which to develop a strategy. Plan, a pastoral plan, how to promote vocations. When we survey our young people who are newly ordained and making final profession, we're able to discern certain correlations, certain patterns, and over time, trends. One of the things that stands out very clearly in the data is the importance of personal relationships. Now, we did not have to take a sociological survey to figure that out. We have that in the scriptures, right? personal relationships are key to promoting a culture of vocations. Saying it from the pulpit is important, but it's not enough. Having vocation posters all around is important, but not enough. They need to feel and experience and hear encouragement from persons that are very special in their social world. Pope Benedict XVI in Porte Fide, number 15. What the world is in particular need of today is the credible witness of people enlightened in mind and heart by the word of the Lord and capable of opening the hearts and minds of many to the desire for God and true life, life without end. Now that is about all Christians. We're all called to be evangelizers, but even more so for religious sisters to fulfill this mandate of the Holy Father, to be credible witnesses. In order to be a credible witness, people have to experience you, your faith, that you make tangible in your prayer and in your works. Also from Pope Francis, Lumen Fidei, persons always live in relationship. We come from others. We belong to others, and our lives are enlarged by our encounter with others. He goes on to state that even our faith, of course, comes from other people, and it is the church that keeps alive the subject that is our faith, right? The church personally hands on the faith from one generation to the next. So looking at our recent surveys, the profession class of 2013 and ordination class of 2014, as well as a survey, a special survey we did in 2012. You know, as I said, for 20 years we've done priests, the newly ordained. But we never surveyed those at the beginning of the process, all the Catholic youth. And we looked at them, and we come up with some very important correlations. First, look at that graph. We have the red bar is those who said women and men who said in the study, and it can be extrapolated by scientific computation, the number of young Catholics that are at least a little interested in vocations. Well, that's 1.4 million men and almost 3 million women. And you're thinking, well, that just says a little. It doesn't say very much. Well, look at the blue graph. Priests and religious brothers, 43,000. Religious sisters, 50. Now, these are 2012 numbers. They've gone down since then. See how small that is, the total number that we are in the United States? In comparison to the green are the number of youths we can extrapolate from the study that are very seriously interested and open to the consideration of a vocation. All we need is a small fraction of those who are the most interested. We'd more than double our current numbers. So what it says is there are those out there who are feeling, who have an experience interiorly of a call. The problem is following through with that. That's where the church comes into play a great deal, in giving them the human ability to respond to a divine call. These are the correlations that we discovered from the data. Those who attended Catholic educational institutions at any level were much more likely to consider a vocation. High schools, you'll see a little bit, it's a little bit more. So those who attend a college, a Catholic college or university, very, very strong correlation. Those who were encouraged to consider a vocation by any type of person, if three people in their social world that they respect encouraged them personally, they were five times more likely to consider a vocation. What happens when they never hear from anyone else personally about encouragement for a vocation? Well, they don't respond. Those who personally know priests and men and women religious, again, the element of relationship. And finally, those involved in parish youth and young adult groups, especially World Youth Day and National Catholic Youth Conference, NCYC. This is especially true of Hispanics. The data shows that young Hispanics identify and have a feeling of belonging to the church more by their participation in events like World Youth Day and NCYC. That's why they are significant in the promotion of vocations. Looking at some of the results of the profession class of 2013, we identified 107 potential candidates. Now, we know there are more than that because not everybody responded. 107 potential candidates. We had a 75% response rate. We identified 69 sisters and surveyed them, and 11 brothers. 74% of the class were Caucasian, 14% Asian, and 12% Hispanic. About a quarter were foreign-born. The average age, 41. Median age, the midpoint, 37. A strong representation of Catholic high school, 31%, and Catholic university or college. 30% of the profession class of 2013 attended a Catholic university or college. You know what the national average is for a Catholic to attend a national a Catholic college university? Sister John Mary can't say this, she probably knows. 7%. So when you see 30% of the religious profession class come from Catholic universities and colleges, that is a statistical correlation. That means that has something to do with it, just on a mathematical basis. The other thing we have begun to track is college debt. Now keep in mind, the figures you see there, 10% of last year's profession class were delayed 2 years on the average and had about $30,000 worth of educational debt. Those are the ones that made it all the way through. We're not even asking or counting or serving those who never get in because of college debt. We're doing the same thing with the ordination class. Here's what the ordination class, just by comparison, because I think one of the things we're learning now with these two surveys, we have enough of the history to see what's going on in the church. Again, we about 500 potential candidates were discovered. Similar breakdown in ethnic backgrounds, 2/3 Caucasian, 15% Hispanic, 11% Asian, 4% African American. 31% were foreign born. Average age was lower than the religious, 34, median age of 32. Again, very strong representation of Catholic high school. 41% of the class attended a Catholic high school, 45% Catholic university or college. And college debt is a growing factor. 27% of the newly ordained still had debt on the average of $24,000 each. So if you line up profession class, ordination class, in terms of the figures that encourage them, look at those numbers. They are suppressed on the profession class side, almost to the individual. The church is promoting and encouraging the ordination priest stronger than it is religious life. Now, there are various factors for this, obviously. It doesn't tell us why. That's the fact. When you look at discouragement, this is how the classes respond. Again, the profession class is a little bit elevated higher in terms of discouragement than the priesthood class. Notice at the bottom, youth minister. They were at the bottom of the previous slide, too, because I challenged them a lot. We know how important their involvement in campus ministry or youth high school parish programs is. There's a high correlation between the two. But when it comes to the youth ministers or the campus ministers giving personal encouragement, very low. But thankfully, they're the least likely to discourage a vocation either. In other words, they're not doing anything. So we are working with them through NCDVD and NRVC to try to turn those numbers around. Incidentally, the high percentage of parish priests that encouraged this year's ordination class, 71%, it hasn't always been that way. It was down in the 30s, in the late 90s, early 2000s. And we identified that as a problem, worked with NCDVD. They developed a toolkit for parish priests. There was programming, there were retreats and convocations to help parish priests promote vocations from the pulpit. And look what happens, the numbers go up. So the committee, in light of all these factors that you saw in the data, has identified in the current pastoral cycle of the Conference of Bishops two priorities for vocations. One, increase the ethnic diversity of new vocations, especially among Hispanics. And secondly, to foster a stronger culture of vocations in our youth, young adult, and campus ministry programs. That's what we hope to do. Why are we concerned about Hispanics? Well, look at this bar graph. It's a little bit hard to read, but the red are the numbers, the percentage of Hispanics in each age
cohort, right? So from before Vatican II all the way up to what we call the millennials, those born after 1981. Actually, today they are saying we are over 50% of our high school age youth and younger are Hispanic. But as you recall, the Hispanic vocations are very low in comparison to their national figures. Why is that? They constitute 38% of the Catholic Church population in the United States, but only 15% of the ordination class and 12% of the profession class. Conversely, the Asians and Pacific Islanders, very strong representation, 5% of the national church population, yet 11 and 14% of the profession class last year. Quite significant there, something going on. Interestingly, even among the 15% that are making it into the ordination and profession classes, for the ordination class, less than 5% of the Hispanics that were newly ordained were U.S. born. So it is not an issue of immigrants not making it into the ordination class or the profession class. It is something else. And that's the greatest worry we have. The largest sector of our youth are U.S.-born, English-speaking Hispanics. And they are the least likely to develop vocations. If we don't solve that problem, we are going to have a great difficulty with increasing our vocations to the priesthood and religious life. So, of course, we are working on that. We've got materials for the promotion of vocations among Hispanics. We have meetings coming up with Hispanic leaders within the church that we're going to ask them to help get on board to learn how to promote vocations. One of the things we learned in that youth study of Catholics and considering on their openness to the consideration of a vocation among the Hispanics, we had enough respond that we could get a scientific sampling and compare Hispanics with others. It was interesting. The Hispanics were the least likely to be open to having one of their sons or daughters have a vocation. They were the most likely, however, of all other ethnic groups to encourage and liked having a vocation in their extended family. So they wanted their nephews and nieces and really wanted them to have a vocation, but their own, no. So that's a problem we're going to have to deal with. And so obviously there are things related to the promotion of vocations to consecrated life that go beyond what we can accomplish. Catholic education is number one, and that's why it's important as a strategy in the church that we help Hispanics get into Catholic education. Also, youth and young adult ministry, we need to deal with that, and then help everyone in terms of their personal encouragement of a vocation. World Youth Day is coming up. We've got resources we're developing already, and one of the great things coming up this 2016, this next World Youth Day, is we are going to develop a number of stateside celebrations. Not all our youth can travel to Poland, as great as a place it is. And quite frankly, we're now discouraging any minors from participating in World Youth Day, anyone under the age of 18, for obvious reasons. And the world's getting a little bit more dangerous. I was down in Rio for the last one. I was just sweating bullets thinking of, you know, what's going to happen to our young pilgrims down there. Nothing happened, thank God. But we have to be prudent. And so we're looking at using modern technology, the possibility of actually video feed through the internet, beaming back some of the catechetical events done in English and the USCCB gathering that includes a vocation element, as well as a lot of social media, that we can encourage vocation directors and youth and campus ministry people to conduct this kind of programming and make it more accessible to more youth here in the United States. Two projects I want to leave you with that are most important: the Year of Consecrated Life, and then the guidelines on receiving pastoral ministers in the U.S. I thank Sister Marie Bernadette for having that memorandum on your table, and you can read more about that. But first of all, the Year of Consecrated Life. There will be an important press conference. You will be represented by Sister Marie Bernadette, who will speak at this USCCB press conference on October 1st. Bishop Burbage is going to introduce the topic, and then we have a representative from one each from the religious conferences. And we are developing a web page, but also the significant element, I think, is the promotion of days with religious throughout the year. And I think you're going to talk about this some more later on today. This is it in a nutshell, that there'll be 3 days, one having to do with community life, one having to do with service, and one having to do with prayer. And nationally promoting and publicizing these events. It will require your local Catholic media, diocesan newspapers and the like, to really push this forward. So that's why we're engaging them so early in October, very first day of October. You see the little logo that we're going to use for these events. It was developed by NRVC, Wake Up the World 2015, Year of Consecrated Life. And the idea is that on these designated days or time periods, there would be, for example, an open house available. We want young people and families in particular. This is the USCCB's influence on the promotion of these events, and that is the desire of the bishops that all of these activities be family-friendly and encouraging. So if your houses were able to have an open house, you would have activities related to young people as well, not just to adults. So not just a lot of talking and presentations, although it'd be wonderful to have presentations on the history of your religious institute in that area and the works that you do, but even to see what's on the inside of your houses can be a great, you know, it's a mystery to some of them. When I was teaching at the Josephinum on North High Street, just north of Columbus, this huge building, it's very prominent, and people, thousands of people go by it every day going to work. And I remember one lay Catholic telling me that, wow, what's it like to live in that mansion? And I could see why they would say that. Looking from the outside, it looked like it was just a very... But believe me, living on the inside, it's no mansion at all. So there is a little bit of a mystique there that's okay, but I think it's important that there be an extension of the experience of consecrated life to more people. So this is our focused effort. Day of Community Life on February 8th, nearest the World Day of Consecrated Life. Sometime in the summer that the religious communities would provide opportunities for service projects. And finally, September 13th. A day of prayer. So opportunities for prayer with religious can be established. Finally, the USCCB has just authorized the release of guidelines on receiving pastoral ministers in the United States. That's the cover, the new cover. It will be available mid-November, but we already have planned 4 regional implementation workshops. January 8th in Los Angeles at Loyola Marymount University, March 12th, in Irving, Texas at the University of Dallas, September 10th near Chicago at Weston O'Hare, and October 22nd near Baltimore at the BWI Marriott. Registration is now open. On the memorandum that you have, the click here, there's an electronic version. Can that be emailed to all of those present? So you would actually be able to just to click there and it'll take you to the registration page for one of those workshops. This is what it contains, 7 sections. Theological introduction, a section on canonical considerations, a section on current civil immigration law, and it's changing rapidly, as you all know. Also, an important section on tax and finance law. A lot of mistakes are made in terms of presuming how to treat an international pastoral minister. For example, with religious, it's not always the case that you can treat them as tax exempt as you can yourself. So it's very important that law is followed. A section on psychological screening, a section on youth protection, and finally, a very robust section on the preparation of the receiving community as well as the international pastoral minister. It has become very apparent that we cannot devote our attention only to the international pastoral minister coming to the United States. We also have to pay attention to the community that's receiving them, whether it's the parish, a school, a religious community, a presbyterate, a hospital. There needs to be a wider consideration of how to be more welcoming. And there you go. That's my presentation. Thank you.